the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Okay, you're very welcome back to The Last Word. Danny McConnell of The Business Post sitting in for Matt. Now, Samantha Cooks was a serial scam artist posing as a nanny, therapist and terminally ill author who abused the trust of many people. The incredible story of how she evaded the Gardaí before her eventual capture is the basis of a new book, Unmasking Samantha Cooks, The Many Lies of a Serial Fraudster. And filmmaker and author Alan Bradley is with me now in studio. Alan, you're very welcome to The Last Word.
Oh, thanks for having me, Daniel.
Many people will be familiar with this story because obviously there was the documentary Bad Nanny, but for those who are maybe not as familiar, who is Samantha Cooks?
Well, the Samantha Cooks story is a pretty wild one, to be honest. Samantha Cooks is an English lady from Gloucester in the UK, and she had some scams over there in her real name. But I suppose where the story really kicks off is in 2013, she came to Ireland, and ever since then, for over a decade, she's moved around communities and towns all over Ireland, small places, changing her name and identity everywhere she went, and kind of most likely in most cases running some kind of scam before running off to the next place. So
do we know what brought her to Ireland in the first instance?
Well, we know that she came to Ireland when she was pregnant with her third child.
Okay.
And a child had been removed from her care already in the UK. So people would sort of suggest that she might have come to evade social services taking the child she was pregnant with. She gave birth to that child in Edenderry, and it was removed by social services and returned to the UK. Mm. So that probably instigated her coming here, but she decided to stay here then and continued on with her deception for the next decade.
Yeah. And what form did these deceptions take, or how did this, I suppose, web of lies begin to create or begin to become formed?
So she would always put herself in the middle of a community, and she would tend to zone in on vulnerable people. That seems to be a theme throughout all her scams. She would, for example, attach herself to families who maybe have children with special additional needs, and she would pose as a child psychologist or an occupational therapist and really immerse herself in these families who are perhaps struggling to access services. Mm. She would come in as a hero, attach herself, and then as time would progress, things would change. And then, for example, she would run something like a Lapland scam. So everyone would be paying her deposits to go on this trip to Lapland, which never was to be. So things like that. However, it would change, and it changed from place to place. She would usually pose as a nanny or an au pair living in families' homes under a fake name with a whole fake backstory. It'd be different every time, but some similarities. And then I suppose where a lot of people became aware of her was in 2022, 2023. She was down in Kenmare in Kerry. And here she was posing as Carrie Jade Williams. And she was a terminally ill, award-winning author with Huntington's disease and gained quite a bit of traction there in that role. So all kinds of different things she ran over the years.
And just there's a lot to unpick in that.
Yeah.
And we'll get to the Carrie Jade Williams thing in a minute. But I suppose, was she doing this deception from, was it all monetary based? Was it all about money? Or what do you think was the driving motivation behind all of this?
It's really interesting because in my 3 years on this, looking at her story, I'm constantly trying to figure out what's the motivation. Sometimes it's financial, but not always. And I think a lot of us can, you know, not agree with, but can understand someone running a financial scam. You kind of understand the motivation there. She's just trying to make easy money.
Hmm.
That wasn't always the case. Sometimes it was just attaching herself to vulnerable people who had a lot of trauma and sort of seems to be feeding off that and presenting herself as a hero character and sort of enjoying the adulation around that. A lot of the scams were totally pointless for financial reasons, but she would get intimately close with people and children as well. So I think that's what really disturbed a lot of the parents involved.
Now, the book argues that the death of her baby, Martha, in 2009 was essentially a turning point in her life, and it built what you call a darker architecture inside her. What do you mean by that?
So I spoke to a lot of her family and friends from Gloucester when she was growing up, and there was a propensity to lie always there. Her first boyfriend spoke about how she lied about having anorexia, how she lied about her mother having cancer, you know, all of it untrue. Mm. So we see that later when she poses as someone having Huntington's disease. So there's threads there that were always seem to have been in her. The girls at school, she went to an all girls grammar school, they would sort of say you could never believe her tall tales. There'd be just one ridiculous story after another, but it was never criminal and it never really hurt anybody too bad. It was just silly stuff.
Mm.
After the death of her baby, Martha, that's when things took a turn. Her mother even said to me that she noticed a kind of change in Samantha then, and she was struggling to cope with what had happened, and a darker turn took place. And I suppose 2011 then, she's convicted in the UK of surrogacy fraud of a young British couple who were struggling to have a child, and she promised to carry this child for them as a surrogate, but of course didn't go through with it. So that's the first time we see something sort of criminal or a darker edge come into play.
And what sort of sums of money are we talking about? Are we talking about hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, or what sort of money are we talking about?
It really varies from place to place. Like, for example, the surrogacy scam in the UK, I think it was approximately £3,000 or something like that the couple say they gave her. That, you know, is a lot of money to a lot of people, but it mightn't seem like an astronomical sum. But to that couple at that point in time, that was their whole life savings. That's everything they had. For example, the Lapland scam that happened in Dublin in 2016, you know, people were giving hundreds of euro over, but there was loads of people giving that. Also, one family were about to sign over a cheque of 20,000 euro. Now, luckily, that didn't happen, but they were about to.
Yeah.
She just got rumbled just before. But then I suppose she defrauded the Irish state out of 60,000 euro.
This is in terms of welfare payments, essentially. Yeah. Now, we know from your reporting and from what has come to light, I mean, she operated under many pseudonyms. Like, there was Carrie Jade Williams, which I said we will talk about, Jade O'Sullivan, Jade Cook, Rebecca Fitzgerald, Lucy Fitzwilliams and Sadie Harris. Did they all operate on the same modus operandi, or did she do different things under different pseudonyms?
Yeah, they'd all be slightly different, but there would be themes there. There would usually be some tragic backstory. There usually would be something very impressive about her, whether she be an author or a children's author, or she would always be in a position that would be very respectable, like a psychologist or an occupational therapist. She'd always be very accomplished. There'd always be links for some reason back to Israel for some unknown reason. She'd constantly talk about that. And her family, she would always kind of build up to be very, very impressive. Like, her mother would be a very wealthy businesswoman from America. Another story was her mother produced all the sandpaper for B&Q and was a very wealthy woman, and Samantha was an heiress. So there would always be these sorts of themes, but they would vary the exact details from place to place.
Now, Carrie Jade Williams obviously was probably the most well-known of her pseudonyms.
Yeah.
And as you said, she had put herself forward as this terminally ill author, she had become this terminally ill author.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Huntington's disease, not everyone might know what Huntington's disease is. It's a kind of almost a combination of Parkinson's, ALS, and Alzheimer's. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me about the Carrie Jade Williams saga and how that played out.
Yeah, so she turned up in Kenmare, and she straight away immersed herself in the community there as this woman with this terminal illness. And what's really interesting is a source gave me loads of her documents and notes and things, which really helped form the book and form an insight into her world. And what I found fascinating in her, in all the contents in these boxes, was there was reams and reams of articles printed off about neurology, about how the brain works, about Huntington's. So she was really studying this stuff, preparing this character to just be able to ream this stuff off to the public and pull the wool over their eyes. It's probably not a condition a lot of people know about. And I think that maybe was a calculated thing, perhaps, because, you know, she could be an authority on it because a lot of people aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Be hard to catch her out in a lie. But she spent her time there and immersing herself also into writers' communities.
A big award.
Yeah, she won a Financial Times Bodley Essay Award, which is very, very prestigious, you know, international competition. And she wrote about having Huntington's disease. And I suppose what I found interesting was she presented that as, you know, non-fiction, as a real thing, but it was fiction. But it's still good writing, and it still won the award. And I think that's a really interesting thing about her. She's an incredible storyteller. And that's what she did with everybody. She created these characters. She created this backstory so rich and nuanced that it pulled the wool over institutions' eyes, over the media's eyes. And, you know, if she put that to something good, she could have done something much better with her life.
When did it all begin to unravel for her?
So I think the Carrie Jade persona was her undoing, because she got too big, I think, and perhaps too confident. You have to bear in mind, she was getting away with this in Ireland for well over a decade at this point. So I think she probably felt she was unstoppable. She was putting herself out there on national media platforms. She was on the radio. She was trying to get RTE Doc on One to do a whole documentary about her.
Okay.
She was everywhere. But at the same time, she was all over social media and TikTok. And that was her undoing. She went viral in 2022 claiming that guests who had come to stay in her Airbnb had been triggered by her disability aids and were suing her for £450,000.
And this is all fantasy?
Yep. But of course that went viral because the whole of social media was outraged that this terrible thing could happen to this lovely woman with a terminal illness. Mm. So the whole of social media rallied behind her. Her hashtag, "This World Can Be Accessible," was trending on TikTok. It was a huge story. But what then happened was victims and TikTok sleuths started to join the dots of, hey, that's that woman we knew as Rebecca in Cork. That's that woman we knew as Lucy in Dublin. That's that woman who was my au pair in Galway. And a WhatsApp victim group formed and some TikTok kind of super sleuths in there too. And they just sort of unraveled her web of lies and exposed her.
And how? And then she came to the, I suppose, awareness of An Garda Síochána?
Yeah, well, what kind of shocked me was that was late 2022. She was outed then on social media, but then also mainstream media like the Irish Independent and places like that took up the story. So she was out there too. But actually, she continued scamming.
Okay.
That's what I uncovered in the book that we found out since. She went to New Ross and tried to scam an elderly old man there. And then she rocked up in Selbridge, posing as a nanny again, Sadie Harris, same shtick as before. And you have to bear in mind, Selbridge really close to Dublin, where she'd run scams before. Mm. It's kind of hard to believe that she was doing that, but she just kept going. Eventually, Gardaí caught up with her and the welfare fraud is what brought her down.
And she's now in jail or where is she now?
Yeah, so she's currently serving a sentence for that welfare fraud in Limerick Women's Prison.
Okay. Mm. So you had done the documentary, Bad Nanny. What was the motivation for doing the book?
So I suppose after the documentary, I thought the story was finished. But what happened was kind of an avalanche of new victims came forward. I suppose maybe seeing the people in the documentary talk gave them confidence. A lot of these victims, you know, and they shouldn't, but they do feel kind of shame or guilt or embarrassment. You know, a lot of these people let this woman in around their children, gave her access to their children unattended by them, let her live in their homes. So there's a lot of guilt, I suppose, some of them carry around that and they're nervous to talk about it. Mm. But maybe the documentary gave them confidence too. So new victims came forward. And like I said, I got boxes of her discarded journals and things, which provided an insight we didn't have before. And that kind of warranted, you know, this telling in the book.
Well, it's the most amazing story. It really is. And I could talk about this for an awful lot longer. But the book is called Unmasking Samantha Cooks, The Many Lies of a Serial Fraudster by Alan Brady. Alan, thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.